Join us on a voyage of discovery with Mohlomi Gekeletso Maobane as we peel through the annals of South African football folklore. Come along for the journey. Show your love, know your game.
Sir Lehmann is an iconic man of letters. The legendary journalist started his career in 1960, and over the next 5 decades, he covered South Africa's expulsion from FIFA, the fall of the world's only National Football League, the formation of the NSL, and South Africa's readmission into international sports. He has covered 10 FIFA World Cups. Back in the early 90s, when Bafana Bafana were still greenhorns in international football, Lehmann unwittingly found himself in the news when an article he wrote in the Sunday Times occasioned the dismissal of South Africa's first national team coach, Stanley Skrima-Tshabalala. In this interview with Mohlomi Gekeletso Maobane, Sir Lehmann relived moments of his iconic football journalism career, including the infamous incident with Stanley Skrima-Tshabalala.
Where was I born? We were living in what is now Doornfontein.
Doornfontein, okay.
It's a nursing home in just near Parktown. It's Florence Nightingale. That's where I was born. Okay. I was born in Johannesburg.
So born in Johannesburg.
Lived in Johannesburg all my life. As a youngster, my first love was cricket. And I achieved quite a lot of success as a cricketer. And, of course, in my mind, I had ambitions of playing cricket for South Africa. I thought I played in the same club team as Ali Bacher, Dr. Ali Bacher.
Dr. Ali Bacher, oh.
Yeah, we were contemporaries. I played in the same cricket team as him. And I did very well as a cricketer. As a teenager, close to provincial level, my cricket playing days gradually faded out. But I was always a sports fanatic, and always the main sports were cricket, tennis, and soccer.
Okay.
They were always my three sports. So I thought, well, look, if things aren't going to work out as an active cricketer, but I still want to be connected with sport in some way. And then the idea came to my mind to become a sports writer. So that was then my idea. I was then about 23 years old.
As Lehmann replaced his bat with the might of his pen, few, if any, must have known that this was the start of one of the most enduring and iconic innings in journalism.
Did you enjoy writing as a kid? Did you?
I enjoyed writing, but I enjoyed sport. Sport was my obsession. So I wrote to 6 sports editors in all around the Johannesburg area. Only one replied. The one replied, he was the sports. He was actually internationally well known. His name was Louis Duffus.
Okay.
Louis Duffus, he was the sports editor of the Song. And he was the only one who contacted me and said, look, come in and we'll have a chat. So I went and I saw him and he explained he had no vacancies, but he would give me work as a freelancer and let's see how it goes, see how you shape. And then for about a year, I worked as a freelancer for The Star. And that's how I started with The Star.
Okay.
That was 1960. Then 1973, a chap called Trevor Bissica, who worked with me at The Star Sports Office, he then became the sports editor of the Rand Daily Mail.
Okay.
He put something very tempting in my way. he said they were thinking of sending someone to the World Cup in 1974.
This is the obvious Germany World Cup.
Yeah, in Germany.
So what was it like? Can you give us a broad overview of what your first World Cup in 1974 Germany was like?
Funnily enough, in 1974... at my first World Cup, the South Africans sent a delegation to that World Cup, hoping to get the international ban on South Africa lifted. It was made up of George Tarby, a guy called Dave Murray,
who was Dave Murray, yeah.
He owned a jewelry shop in Johannesburg, but he was also president of the White Association. So they got together one of the white officials called Dudley Zagno, and they arrived in Germany to attend the FIFA Congress to make a plea for South Africa, saying that soccer wasn't racist, but they had to go along with the laws of the country. And when they came to the FIFA Congress, they weren't even allowed in. They were stopped at the door. Said, we don't want South Africa here, you banned. And I got in as a journalist. So it was like just a huge gathering of buddies, you know, all full of themselves.
All full of themselves.
Yeah. You know, one funny little incident I remember from 74. It's a minor incident, really, but it's quite funny. I was attending the final. It was actually at the final between Holland and Germany. And at half time, I went to the toilet, and so I was making a wee in the toilet, and the guy standing next to me, he turned around to me and he said, toilet facilities aren't great here, are they? I said, yeah, they're not the greatest. It turned out he was Henry Kissinger.
What?
The foreign minister of the United States. He was also a soccer fanatic.
Henry Kissinger?
He was in the toilet with me. Yeah, Henry Kissinger.
That's interesting. Let me get this first. At that point, how exposed were you guys to international football?
In all my years, I covered 10 World Cup tournaments. The last one was in 2014. I went to Brazil. That was the 10th World Cup tournament I'd covered. I went to Germany 74, Argentina 78, Spain 82, Mexico 86, Italy 90, USA 94, France 98. And then I was a bit upset. I missed the 2002 World Cup.
So you could have been on 11.
That would have been 11, yeah. So yeah. Instead, it was 10. 2006, I managed to go to Germany again, to the World Cup. And then, of course, 2010.
You're here too.
Yeah, and then Brazil, 2014.
Now, how would you explain apartheid to someone who doesn't know it? How would you explain it?
Well, it was just plain prejudice, I think, and also a superiority complex, where they thought they were better than the blacks. But also, the whites were in the minority, so they had to cling to what they had, believing that if they made concessions, the blacks would take over totally. But it was obviously a plain blind prejudice.
Lehmann, however, did not let this prejudice deter him from answering his call, which is documenting South African football in its entirety.
I was the only white guy who used to cover black soccer as well, the Black League. I used to go into the townships and cover Orlando Pirates, Morocco Swallows, etc., etc. You know, I make clear my political views against apartheid. And I said a lot of things on the sports pages.
Oh, big fan.
You know, I could use sport as a vehicle against apartheid. And I'm sure the nationalist government never read the sports pages. Otherwise, they would have come down on me. So I got away with that. And I used to cover the black soccer, which was segregated. There was white leagues and black leagues.
Now, if you remember, after FASA got banned, Foster came up with what was called the multinational games. Do you remember those?
Yes. And then Stanley Ross instigated that the suspension be lifted. So for a couple of years, a year or two, South Africa came back. But then there was so much international pressure that the suspension was reinstated.
Yes. So what happened is in the 70s, where P.J. Foster then came up with this plan to have the multinational games where he said we'll have different South African nations playing against each other. We had the colored national team. Like, now, do you remember those?
Yeah, the multinational teams.
Multinational teams, yes.
Yeah, there was a white team, a colored team, an Indian team, and a black team. But it was just a farce, really.
It was a farce. Did you cover them?
Yes.
And how was the start?
The white team was probably the best. The blacks was very skillful, but the white teams were more. It didn't last all that long. They were more experienced. They had greater experience. So they were the top multinational team, if you want to call them that.
And what was the atmosphere at stadiums during those games?
The crowds were segregated. The blacks on this side of the stadium, whites on that side. So that's why the whole thing was a farce. When soccer first became multiracial in the late 70s, and Kaizer Chiefs and Highlands Park qualified for the cup final of that period. The cup final was played at the Rand Stadium in Johannesburg. And the game went into extra time. And I think it was 2-2. And then in the last minutes of extra time, Highlands got a corner. And the goal was headed in with minutes left. So actually, Highlands should have won the game 3-2. Then the referee, a white referee, disallowed the goal. And then in conversation with him a number of years later, I brought it up. I said, well, why did you disallow that goal? He said, you know, honestly, I feared for my life. He said, I thought if I gave the goal and Highlands won the game, the blacks would kill me. Those were his words.
Consistent with their general outlook and practice, amongst others, the white government never saw fit to ensure that those whom they considered their inferiors, on whose backs modern South Africa was built, had adequate recreation facilities. Orlando and Natal Sprit stadiums were exceptions, and Lehman covered many a match in these secret spaces.
Orlando was the main. I used to go to Natal Sprit, of course.
Natal Sprit was mainly Pirates.
No. Pirates were always at Orlando Stadium.
Always at Orlando Stadium.
Chiefs in the early days also. They played at Ellis Park for a while. And Swallows played in... They were from Dubie. That's why they were called the Dubie Birds.
Okay.
Swallows was a prominent team in those days. Much more than they are today.
When you first watched Pirates, do you remember who were the prominent players and officials, and do you remember who were the leading people there?
Jomo Sono, of course, stood out. Kaizer, of course, played for Pirates as well.
Did you get to see him at Pirates?
Yes. In the 60s, he would play in the United States League and come and play for Pirates. And then there was the difference, the split at Pirates, which resulted in the forming of Kaizer Chiefs.
Tell us a bit about that. What do you remember about it?
I think it was not a player split. It was more on the administrative side and the financial differences. The players really felt that they weren't getting their rights financially, that the administrators were keeping money for themselves and that the players weren't being treated fairly.
Do you remember how you first knew of or how you first met Ivan Khoza?
Well, I think at this interview was the first time I'd spoken to him casually before, but the first time I really got to know him was at this interview where I interviewed him and came up with the Iron Duke name. Well, I knew about, the internal friction going back to a period in the 1980s when Pirates had a year where they fared so badly they should have been relegated.
And
they were only saved through manipulation. They finished, I think, second bottom in the league. They should have been relegated, but they changed the rules that only the bottom team are relegated.
Yeah. As early as the 1930s, South African football was divided across racial lines and even amongst Africans. As aforementioned, Lehmann covered all these leagues, a privilege that came with witnessing one of the dynasties of South African football.
And then did you know them, like Henry House and that family, Hauser family?
Quite well. They were Peter Hauser, Henry Hauser. They were among the top South African players. Played at the type of soccer that was quite experienced. You had a lot of black players who were black teams also who were very talented ball wise, but not so good tactically wise. The Hausers were shrewd players. They understood the tactics of the game very well.
After decades as a pariah in the world, the release of political prisoners in the early 90s occasioned major changes in the country, including South Africa's readmission into international sports. Bafana Bafana, the South African senior men's national team, made their international debut on the 7th of July 1992 against the indomitable Lions. A Dr. Khumalo penalty ensured the hosts won the match 1-0. It is when the official game started that it became apparent what the effects of being in the doldrums for years were for South African football. Sy Lehmann bore witness to this chapter of South African football, a period during which he unwittingly found himself being subject of a breaking news story in South African football.
In world football, when they were banned, they couldn't play in Africa.
So, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, so when they played in the qualifying for the 1994 World Cup, they lost to Zimbabwe. They thought they'll play. Zimbabwe will be a piece of cake. I went to Harare to cover that game. They lost to Zimbabwe. And then they were in the same qualifying section as Nigeria. So they went to Nigeria and they got a good hiding from Nigeria. Screamer was the coach.
Was the coach. Tell us about that episode between you and Screamer.
That prompted. Screamer was made the Bafana coach.
After Jeff Bartlett.
Yeah, who was booted out because it was discovered that he'd made false claims about his record. Even before the games, he was thrown out as South African coach.
But what did you make of that? Because he was a proven coach. He had won with Chiefs, he had won with Al Ahly. What did you think?
But his record overseas, he'd made false claims of titles his teams had won when he'd not actually won those titles. So he And some people didn't like him in any case, and so they used that as something of an excuse. So then Screamer took
over.
No, I mean, those defeats, I wouldn't say that Screamer's fault, but he had no experience. Nobody had experience in South Africa.
The 4x4 defeats.
Yeah. So, and then I was working for the Sunday Times, Edward Griffiths said, well, you know, we've got to write us a big story about the failure of South African soccer. So I said, well, I think what is needed is a coach with more international experience. You know, the players are inexperienced, the coach is inexperienced. So at least let's get a more experienced coach to take over. So I wrote a story in the Sunday Times with Edward pushing me. He was quite strong on the idea. So basically saying Bafana need a more experienced coach under the circumstances. It wasn't a nasty article, really. Just saying the guy's not experienced enough for the job. And Edward put a page, full page story, and he put the headline. It wasn't my headline. And the headline was, "Don't scream, just go."
Yeah.
Right across the page, "Don't scream, just go." So the NPSL used to have a press conference every Tuesday. So after that headline, after that Sunday Times story, I was at the press conference at FNB Stadium. That's where they used to hold it. And I was walking in the corridor with Billy Cooper. And who do we bump into? Screamer. And he was furious, mad. And Billy was shaking. He was shivering. He was a bit, Stanley, I didn't say anything. I didn't write that story. It wasn't me. So Screamer actually said, "Why do you write that rubbish?" Gave me a punch. So we reported it also, that he'd assaulted me. I said, "Stan, it wasn't personally against you," but he wasn't listening. "You're writing rubbish." So the SAFA then, I think they weren't happy with Screamer.
In any case.
So they used that as an excuse to call him before the committee for what he'd done, and then they fired him. You know, funnily enough, over the years, I became more friendlier with Screamer.
Yeah, so that's,
And, you know, we became good friends. I've got pictures of myself and Screamer holding hands, basically. So that was forgotten many years ago.
So it never became like an injury.
But I think he's still, in the back of his mind, he still doesn't like that headline. But we became friends.
Over the years, who would you say, what's the greatest match? If you had to name one match, what's the greatest match you've ever watched?
Locally or internationally or any?
Or both, locally and internationally.
I find it a bit difficult to think of one game, but that Holland-Germany game was one of them. Let me just name a few that come to mind.
Okay, yeah, can you name a few then?
Holland-Germany.
The 74 final.
Yeah, the world final. Argentina-Holland in 78 was a great game. Then we go to 86. Argentina beat Germany. That's when Maradona was at his peak. Maradona had a fantastic game. I saw Maradona play in that game in 86 in the final. And he was really a player in a class of his own. But I always rate Pele as the king. People say, what about Maradona? Pele had no flaws. In 82, this great Brazilian team, they played Argentina in an earlier round, and they outplayed Argentina, Brazil. And
well, that's the team with Socrates and Falcao.
Yeah. And Maradona was, in his earlier years, he was already being highly boosted by Argentina, but he was just outplayed by the Brazilians, and he was sent off. He got a red card.
Okay.
For it was a total deliberate kick of he kicked Falcao in the balls, basically.
What?
Yeah, he got a red card in that game.
Okay.
And also in the 94 World Cup, he was expelled from the World Cup.
Yeah, I remember that. That's when he was busted for the drugs.
So he was a flawed character.
Yeah.
You know, fantastic as a footballer on his day, but with a person.
Flaws.
Yeah. Whereas Pele was no flaws.
Okay. And then in South Africa, who named the top five South African players that you've seen?
Well, funnily enough, if you look at goalkeepers, the one that stands out in my mind, I go right back to the NFL.
Mm.
There was a goalkeeper called Trevor Gething.
Trevor Gething, yeah, I've read of him.
Played for Arcadia.
Mm.
He was a brilliant player, brilliant goalkeeper. He was so athletic. So he stands out in my mind as a goalkeeper. Sizwe Motlhong.
Sizwe Motlhong.
The right back.
From Cosmos.
He was a great among fullbacks. He was a great attacking, good defense, and he knew how to attack. Jomo at his best was a very special player. But I think I would put, at top level, I would put Shoes Mashu. Those were the players who stand out.
Who stood out for you? And then coaches?
Tuani, to me, was a very good coach.
Yeah, the godfather.
Yeah.
Mm.
And as a centre-back, of course, stood out. The Bafana captain.
Neil Tovey.
No, not Neil.
Lucas Khatev.
Lucas was a top player.
Fittingly, in the course of his long career, Lehmann has also won a number of accolades himself.
I think I probably, through my career, will be remembered more than anything as a sports journalist, particularly as a soccer writer, maybe more than anything else, and a more limited success as an active performer. But what comes to mind, of course, is covering 10 World Cup finals, 10 World Cup finals over the years. During my career, which now stretches 63 years as a journalist. I was also the first South African sports writer of the year in 1978.
For which paper was this? We were writing for that?
The Rand Daily Mail. I was the first recipient of South African sports writer of the year. I won that award a few times in later years. I was also the first South African sports writer of the year. That was an award from CNN, 1998. I was named African sports writer of the year. And then 2 years ago, I was surprised to be named as the journalist of the year for my career as a journalist.
Mm.
Not simply as a sports writer, but as a journalist covering all fields over my full career. In my more limited success as an active performer, as I mentioned, I won 7 age group South African tennis championships. I was selected for the South African age group tennis team that took place in the World Age Group Championships in Cape Town. And I reached a close provincial cricket level in my younger days as a teenager, playing in the same club team as former South African captain Dr. Ali Bacher. And those are the more immediate things that come to mind.
What is special about football? What do you love about football? What makes football special for you?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. It's the most popular sport in the world, undoubtedly. It's just like having something put into your blood that football followers go crazy in some instances. It's become a fanatical sport and stands out as the most popular sport in the world. Probably one reason why it's, say, might be more popular than some other sports is because it's a team sport. And it requires teamwork, whereas you get great individual sports like tennis and golf, boxing maybe on a more limited scale. Boxing has limited sport. But I think that the teamwork is what maybe makes popular just a little more popular than some of the great individual sportsmen.
What's your wish for South African football? What would you like to see?
Well, I would like Bafana to be a genuine world class. After they won the African Nations Cup, they had a good team. I think the opposition wasn't that great. I don't think South Africa reached a world ranking of 17 for winning the African Nations Cup. But I don't think they ever reached that, really, the top echelon group. So, I mean, currently the team's ranked about 70. And that's where it's been for the last 15 years. I think the wish for South African soccer is to have a team that can really stand up to top world level, like the way Morocco has this year. It can be done. It doesn't have to... maybe winning the World Cup is going to be very difficult, but where they can, say, become maybe a top 10 or top 20 team in the world, genuinely, not through publicity or false reports.
What is the role of a journalist in society? How would you describe that?
I think in a couple of words, inform honestly. I think a journalist must have the knowledge to spread a message to the public as a whole. But I think apart from the knowledge, which is essential, is to spread that knowledge honestly, to criticize honestly, and not try to make yourself popular.
Mr. Rimmon, thanks for your time.
Yeah.
My name is Mohlomi Kekiletso Maobane. I am a writer with a particular interest in South African and African football. My view of the game of football is predominantly historic. Documenting football has been, without a doubt, the most fulfilling thing I have ever done. To paraphrase the writer Corey Brian Penn, the game has been good to me and preserved my youth. Not only did it capture my goals, it told me the truth.